This week on Art of the Air features artisan woodworking of Michigan City's Nicole Schaefer, creating custom designed woodcraft pieces. Next, we have FamFolk's Meg DeMakis talking about her innovative Mission to Mars project. Our spotlight is with Dale Popovich discussing his upcoming virtual watercolor workshop offered through the Chesterton Art Center in April and May.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Our underwriters for Art in the Air are regional art patron Mary Levan, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. Thank you for your generous support. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Thanks to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager, and Tom Maloney, vice president of radio operations at Lakeshore Public Radio. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at LakeshorePublicRadio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or through our Facebook page. Art on the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you this great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight someone who's been with us before. He's a IWS watercolorist throughout Northwest Indiana, but also painting all over, giving workshops and things. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Welcome Dale Popovich to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Aloha, welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, you have a new one coming up, and it's going to be Saturday, April 24th, and again on May 8th at the Chesterton Arts Center, but it's going to be virtual. It's like a beginning intermediate virtual workshop. So tell us a little bit about that and some details.
Well, it's from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's on 2 days. They're 2 weeks apart so that the students have a chance to paint the demonstration I'm going to demonstrate to them. So the first day we're going to be, I'm going to be painting the demonstration, and my wife will be fielding questions to me as I paint. And I'm going to be painting reflections of water with the shorelines, of course, up above it. And it's something that a lot of people ask for, and there's going to be a lot of greens and yellow greens in the composition. But greens have a tendency of being a little bit more difficult to paint because of the range of color that we have on the greens. But it's going to be a step-by-step process. And that process, as every sequence of part of the painting I'm doing, I will take a still picture of it, which will be also part of the packet that we send to the students. And my wife will be videotaping it, which is sent to the students also. So they'll know and understand how I'm using the color, how I'm mixing the color. I'm going to explain everything to them as I go through the process. so that they can see how I'm applying the watercolor. And usually a watercolor is in three steps. You have the beginning, which is very quick, and the middle part of it, you slow down. And at the end, you're really at a crawl doing finishing touches to the painting and explaining how to create a focal point, how to create movement, and understanding how much you don't put in. It's always more important what you don't put in than what you do put in a painting. I've been doing this for 40 years, and as I've always said to the students, don't be afraid to make mistakes. Don't be afraid to start over. The only thing that dies is a piece of paper.
You know? That's true. So, Dale, can you truly be a beginner to take this?
Oh, definitely. Most of my workshops are with beginning and intermediate students. And I've had students come in without knowing anything about watercolor, and they end up doing actually quite well. And sometimes they surprise the heck out of me to where they're...
Well, they come with no bad habits, right?
They come with no bad habits. But also what I'm also impressing on the student at the time is that they're not painting the photograph. They're painting a painting. And if it comes out different than the photograph or different than what I've done, that's fine, long as it works within its own frame of reference. That's the most important thing.
So how has virtual teaching worked for you? I mean, that's got to be a whole different thing than the interpersonal thing of being in a room teaching and giving immediate feedback. You know, you can walk around. So how's that for you?
Well, we started last year doing Zoom, Facebook Live Saturdays. It was free. We did a dozen of them. And then I started doing Zoom classes through the palette. I was teaching at the Elmhurst Art Museum at one point. I've done them for art leagues in northern Wisconsin. And what they do is we have a screen showing all the students, and I slide back and forth. And at the end of every process, I have them show me what they've done. I tell them what they need to do, adjustments and so forth. And I go down the line, and so that they can see how they're doing compared to what other students are doing. And that way I can make those judgment calls in that process. So it's like walking around class.
But what's interesting is the people that have told us, they said they've learned more doing Zoom because they're not walking around visiting. They're truly focusing on the entire learning process.
And it's true. It's amazing how the classes do take to this format.
Yeah, it's interesting. We did a test last spring with a student I have in my studio class here at the house, and a student that we were in class with 40 years ago.
In college.
And she hadn't picked up a watercolor brush in 40 years. So we did a Zoom test class with them. It was free. It was more for me than it was for them. But the comments I got from both the ladies was they were so focused on what they were doing because they weren't in a class. And one of the ladies liked to roam around when she came in class, see what other people doing, talk what she did that week. But she didn't have that opportunity, so she had the focus on what she was doing. And she says, I can't believe how well it worked out. So she enjoyed it. She ended up taking my workshop up at Dillman's last fall.
Well, we have to wrap it up right there. That was Dale Popovich with Mary Lee Popovich in the background. First class is Saturday, April 24th, with then critique on Saturday, May 8th. Information can be found at dalepopovich.com or at chestertonart.org. Thank you for being on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And next on Art of the Air, we have Nicole Schaefer. While she studied chemistry at Purdue University North Central, she is very much into woodworking. She has 1,000 years of rich history spanning back the humanities origin, the science and craft, and all the aspects of bringing together. Her website is tarawooddesign.com, and she's located in Michigan City, has a custom woodcraft there, and so we're pleased to have her on the show. Welcome to Art of the Air, Nicole.
Welcome.
Hi, great to be here.
Well, we always like to start off our show with our guests about your journey in life. So how you got from where you were growing up and things like that to where you are now. So please share that.
Well, I I'm very inquisitive about life, and I believe that I always have been ever since being a younger child. And I've definitely gravitated toward being in the outdoors, which I did a lot of my playing time, spent a lot of my time when I was younger by myself and just exploring and learning how nature worked. And I was very into animals, and I had a horse. I was a fortunate child. I had a horse, and I spent a lot of time with her. So I had a female horse, and spending a lot of time outside, I think just really helped me connect with myself and helped me connect with the things that I was most passionate about. And there's a lot of science in being in the outdoors. And I had all of the parts of my horse memorized by the time I was, I think I was probably in eighth grade when I got her. So I was very passionate about that, the anatomy and the physiology and rocks and dirt and frogs and trees and just anything I could get my hands onto. How that connects with me in the arts, I do have to say that when I was younger, I think it was in fourth grade or fifth grade, my art teacher, I was at Riley Elementary at the time, and he saw something in me that he must have thought was important. So he called on the local newspaper to do an article on me when I was really young. About painting, and I remember that for pretty vividly. I mean, I think that's kind of a big thing for a fifth grader to have an article written about them.
Oh, with a boost.
It was a boost. So he saw something in me when I was young, and I think it took me quite some time to realize that I had talent in the field of making. And I feel very fortunate to be in the position that I'm in. And I do see that a lot of the things that I've been passionate about have brought me to connect with woodworking specifically. It's very expansive to me, to learn and to understand about the material that we work with is really important, because as I'm going to use an example, as plastic work, plastic is pretty stable. I mean, if you make a table out of plastic, it's not going to move, but wood is a material that's constantly moving. It's constantly growing or shrinking with the changes in the seasons, and to understand its biology and where it comes from helps to make a more quality piece and to connect more with what its purpose is. So that's been pretty important to me to understand that deeper background. So going to school for biochem helps me understand chemistry, and to understand the process that can go into different tannins in woods and how you can get different colors from certain species when you can't get them from others, or why some woods are quite dangerous actually to work with. And others are pretty non-toxic.
That beautiful spalting can be, you know, cultivated, which was so interesting.
The biology with that, yeah, and how those different organisms can bring such incredible figure and colors. Something definitely to be showcased in that. So it's been a fascinating, to answer your question. I mean, it's a pretty long answer to try to sum up someone's journey in a short conversation, but I definitely feel like a lot of my paths have aligned and are very useful tools with what I work with now, and it holds my attention pretty thoroughly, and I'm just really driven to learn more and more and more about it. And I'm excited to see where that takes me.
You know, it's really kind of hard to separate the arts from the sciences, from the engineering, from, you know, mathematics. It's just, it's also woven together. And so it's so beautiful to hear how you actually had all of that happening for you during childhood. I think that outdoor exposure is just so important, as well as having, you know, the horse to take care of and learn from. So this art teacher who noticed something, was that was specifically with painting, or was that your first kind of art practice you went into, was painting?
Well, I really wish I remembered his name, because he was a pretty cool guy. We were doing drawing in class, I think, but I had been painting. So we weren't painting in class. I was painting a picture of my dad and what he did. He's an auto mechanic, and he on the side, he does that for a hobby, and he does auto body work. So he paints the vehicles and does repairs on old classic cars. So that might be an exposure to part of the craft too. I mean, I remember him endlessly being in the garage on his time off.
So he welcomed you there, because that explains so much, actually.
Oh yeah. I had been in the shop with him pretty often. I mean, I really thought it was a neat place. Now, I didn't really do anything in there with him, but I was exposed to it. And I feel like that was a big part. So I painted, documented, I guess that would be the way. That was, you know, documenting what my dad did. And so I painted that, and I would try to do like the still lives. I think I was really fascinated with Bob Ross at the time. And, you know, he had that really calming voice that everyone loves. So, you know, I tried to like mimic some of those brushstroke
moves.
Yeah. And that's actually neat for me to think about, having that experience with my dad, because I don't really think about that very often, but it was pretty big exposure. And he and I actually, going back to the experience that I had with having a horse, to keep a long story short, I boarded her at the fairgrounds for many years, and I would ride my bike from my house to take care of her every single day. No matter what the weather. And so we had a very nice old couple that lived next to his house that offered a small piece of land in the back that we could put a pole barn on for my horse. And we built it together. And I think I must have been in 10th grade at that time. So that was my first exposure to building. And that was pretty cool.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
So I'm going to fast forward a whole bunch right now.
All right.
And I was wondering if you could, and I'm going to specifically, I'm not touching on woodworking yet. This is more about your other creative ventures. So when you get the call to collaborate, like with Mucho Moss, could you describe what that was like? Did they just give you, did they just say, just do what you want? Or was it, what was the collaboration like on that? That was it's fabulous what you've done for them.
Yeah, Frank is the coolest. He's a really, really neat guy. You know what? I think I might have reached out to him knowing that he was opening. And I think I asked him if he needed anything that was sensitive to the area for his shop. Oh, wait, no, that's not actually how we created a relationship. I'm sorry. his location in La Porte, he put a post on Facebook asking if someone could do chalkboard art in that shop, and someone recommended me. So that is actually how we started that relationship. And, so I did the chalk art that's in the location in La Porte. And then when he was getting ready to open the one in Michigan City, I did reach out to him and offered to make something that would be culturally sensitive to that. That's how I'm recalling it. I might be wrong, but that's how I'm recalling how that happened. So the South Shore Train, obviously for our area, is just like very, very, very important to who comes to Michigan City from Chicago or from the other from the East. And I see kind of the vibe of his space as being this real like urban and hip and alive location where people can gather and just be free to be creative and relax. And you know, like I gravitate toward this graffiti style kind of thinking. And then I don't know if you've ever noticed the Taco TV, Taco Television. There's a little TV that has like lightning bolts coming out of the top, and there's a taco, and it's shaped like an old television from the 1980s. And I just really had a lot of fun making those for him. So I'm so happy that I could do that for him. Yeah. Yeah. And then he has another piece in the Royale with cheese. There's a piece in that building as well. And that one, that was actually Laura Fosberg reached out to me to make a piece for the Michigan City Arts Committee. They were doing some kind of a contest for the Brew Fest, and they were picking out a couple of different artists to put together pieces that were sensitive to Michigan City specifically. So I created there's two hands shaking. Both of them are tattooed, symbolically tattooed. One has like skater tattoos. One's the cooling tower. And then there's another that's like chef kind of oriented, very creative influence tattoos. And one's black, one's a white. So they're, you know, it's like this racial integration, and it's very, I feel like that's very what we are as Michigan City. We have a lot of diversity. So that was the piece that I created, and it's not the original. It's a picture of the original. And I had a company print it out. So he was gracious enough to take that and put that one up there.
Oh, excellent.
Excellent. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Hey, I was going to ask about the sawmill project you were working on. Could you talk about that?
Yes. Oh, we're so excited. We actually just got the last bits of the parts in last week. So for years, Chris has been with Terrawood. He has been milling and slabbing lumber via Alaskan Mill, which is this like box cage contraption that holds onto a fairly large chainsaw bar and a pretty powerful chainsaw head. And it lays on its side and you push it through the log long ways. So it's not like chopping it into discs. You're slabbing it with a chainsaw, and it is very intensive and it takes an extraordinary amount of time. However, you still get this beautiful locally milled lumber, and an air dried board is so much more intensely colored and it preserves more of diversity in the grain. And it just really, it's a totally different experience having an air dried or slow dried piece of lumber rather than something that you can acquire, which is still very beautiful, but comes from a more of a steamed and kiln heated piece of wood. So right. You're getting a different product, and it's with the Alaskan mill, and it's very labor intensive. So what you're getting from that is, you know where the lumber came from. You have a better connection with it over time. You know how it was cured and cared for, and the final use of it is like the completion of that story. So that mill had been in works, and he also had a partner that could mill much larger logs, a couple of walnut, a really beautiful silver maple. Had been milled with his friend. So I actually don't think that he's any longer doing that work. But this mill that we got is called, it's an HD 36. So this can accommodate 36 inch diameter log. It's on a raised track. It's on a trailer, so it has the lumber has to be the log has to be lifted onto the trailer, which is about 18 to 24 inches off the ground.
Oh my gosh.
So we have these large arms that you roll the log onto, and it's hydraulic system that lifts the entire log up. It's probably, you know, like 2,000 to 4,000 pounds, depending on how big the log is. And it lifts it up on top of the track, and it is a bandsaw mill. So it's turned sideways, and that bandsaw mill can mill a variety of thicknesses. You can mill dimensional lumber with it. You can mill the wooden shingles with it. So it's a very diverse system, and it's quick, and it's not bad on your back like Alaskan mill would be. So we're really excited to take as many opportunities as we can to utilize this to answer calls. People reach out and say, hey, we've got this like big maple log, or we've got this like piece of land, and we really need to clear out some of this fallen lumber. Very rarely would we go and take a tree down. It's generally just felled trees that we would mill. There's quite a few of them out there. So this just opens the door to the opportunity to create those relationships with people where if they have something that they want taken down or taken and turned into slab lumber or dimensional lumber, now we can do that without having such a constraint on time and energy and resources. So this really opens the door to that expansion. Very excited.
Yeah. Tell us about some of the things that you do with lumber. I mean, you know, we're talking about lumber, but what are the end sure. products? I mean, because our radio audience probably can't visualize it. So tell us about some of the things you're making.
So it's pretty diverse, actually, what we can do. I just finished redesigning our website, and it's a really enjoyable task to do. And the reason it's so enjoyable is to see all of the work that has happened over time. And that work ranges from doing installations in someone's home, which could be a cabinet system. It could be a built-in. It could be a built-in bar. Or this could range to furniture, benches, platform beds with slabs or refined headboard, slab tables. I think the most beautiful tables that we have done personally, I feel, are the book matched slab tables with the live edges. And sometimes they just come together as if they were meant to be that table. And that is really what we try to do with a piece that we pull out. It's dried. It dries for years. It's an inch per thickness of lumber, and generally we're milling at 3 + 1 for every inch additional. So some of those slabs dry for five to six years, and when you pull them out, you want to make the best of it. And we really take a lot of time to make the most of what that lumber can become. And sometimes it is quite a challenge because that lumber might over the drying time twist and crack and do the things that make it challenging to make it be what you want it to be. It can only be what it will be. And that's really what we do with the furniture that we make that's slabbed and live edge is just to be extremely sculptural process. And so to answer your question, it's a pretty wide range. Anything that you could put in a house that's wood or even exterior, Terra Wood will do it.
So Nicole, what's the next thing you want to explore or learn? What are you curious about?
Oh my gosh. I think that it's expanding right now from just understanding the biology and wood species. Now that we're getting into milling, I'd really love to be able to identify trees more readily to go out. Oh yeah, that's a white oak. That one's easy for me to identify, but there's others that can be interesting. There's quite a few different poplar varieties, lime tree or a linden tree, basswood, cherry. I mean, there's a really long list of different different hardwoods in the region, and I'd like to be able to identify those more readily. So that's in the field. And in the wood shop, hand-cut joinery is definitely on my list. I would love to make an entire cabinet made of hand-cut joinery.
I know, I've been watching videos on the Japanese woodworkers and how everything, oh, it's just like so beautiful to watch that come together.
There's a couple of people that I follow and really enjoy watching their work and how things come together. There's one man that's in Germany. He has a Japanese descent, and he takes the Japanese homes apart and restores them. So he's like going in and taking these beautifully built homes that don't have a nail in them and understanding the joinery and restoring them. It's pretty incredible.
Do you have a favorite kind of wood to work with?
No, okay. I don't. It's all application. Some woods are better for other things than others. Cherry is beautiful. I just built a table out of sycamore. Sycamore was really challenging to work with, but my God, was it beautiful. It was really pretty.
We have less than a minute, but first of all, has COVID, how's that impacted you during this time?
You know, I think about that question a lot, and I knew you were going to ask it. It hasn't impacted me at all. I mean, I'm pretty introverted. I shouldn't say at all. I haven't been able to see my family as much. So that has been kind of a challenge. My mom and my stepdad, her husband, I try to be very careful, and as well as my dad and his wife. So I try to be as careful as possible to not do an extraordinary amount of exposure. So when it comes to my creative life and my life as a mother, to my daughter, nothing has changed, or my life with my partner, Chris, nothing has changed, but with my parents, I would like to see them more often.
We understand. Real quick, tell us your website.
Tara Wood, TerraWood design.com.
And you're located at
607 Franklin Street in Michigan City, Indiana.
Okay, we thank you. So from Tara Wood Design, Nicole Schaefer, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and telling us about your life journey and your journey in wood.
Yes, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks so much. Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air someone who's been with us before, Meg Demakis of FamFolk. It's a wonderful opportunity. She teaches at IUN, has been a teacher throughout Northwest Indiana. And also along with her is one of student, Emily DeCausemaker. And they're going to talk a little bit about what they're doing with a special new project going on. And it's a wonderful thing. So Meg and Emily, welcome to Art on the Air.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, first up, Meg, tell us a little bit about FamFolk and everything before we get into your project, the background of that and such.
Okay. Well, it all started when I retired from teaching and I was kind of blue. And I said, you know, I really miss projects and field trips when it came to teaching. And so one of my daughters, Jessica, said, well, Mom, why don't you form your own nonprofit and call it Family Folklore? And that's how it started. And since then, we've done things all around Northwest Indiana, and we've even branched into Michigan, and that's about it. That many places. We've worked with a church group making a list of family favorite recipes, ate them, and videotaped talking about the person in each family that was the one that did the cooking. We've done outdoor radio plays and puppet shows, and indoor. We've been at galleries. We've been at the Opera House in Valpo. We've had a 5-piece brass band. We've had collected tickets. We haven't collected tickets. We've done a lot of things, and we've had a lot of fun.
Tell us a little bit about your background, too, just to fill that out.
Okay, well, I grew up in Hammond, and I became a teacher in the 70s. out in Vermont. I went to IU and then I moved out to Vermont for a couple of years and then came back here because the money was better and I missed Northwest Indiana and have been here ever since. I was a remedial reading teacher for a lot of years and worked with gifted and talented. Then I became a classroom teacher. A lot of the most great, I taught fourth grade the most of any. And I also started teaching on the college level. As I went back to school, I got a principal's, I earned a principal's license, a superintendent's license, an educational doctorate at Loyola in Chicago. And so family folklore has someone with a lot of credentials.
Very good. Our other guest is yes. Our other guest is Emily DeCausemaker. Emily, tell us about your background, and you're still going to college. So tell us everything about you and where you're from and everything.
Yes, sir. So I live in Northwest Indiana, Hobart, Indiana, to be specific, and I am a senior at IUN. Hopefully, this will be the last little bit, and then I will finally be graduating and hoping to return to do my master's in business. So that's kind of the goal. Right now, I work at a company called American Income Life, and I'm starting pretty much my own business with it. So as I grow my own team and everything, I'm kind of using, hoping to use my business background to help out with that a little bit more. I don't know what else. The only other thing that I really do is I do teach people how to ride motorcycles throughout Northwest Indiana, but throughout all of Indiana. I got certified when I got right out of high school. And so I've just been kind of working and going to school for the last 4 years. So just having a great life.
Excellent.
Well, what we're here for is to learn all about the mission to Mars and your current projects, which is really so relevant right now with all these beautiful images coming from Mars to us, which are so captivating. And also, you're touching on the lost lessons of Krista McAuliffe, too, I believe. So we're so interested to hear about this project. Meg, could you fill us in?
All right. Well, some of our projects in the past started with the study of the earth, land, and the sea. And in doing our various field trips, we ended up at the Aquatorium in Miller, and we started studying about flight. And then last year we took a tour of the Challenger Learning Center, and we were like just amazed what was going on over there. And so that's how this grant came to be. It's called Third and Fourth Rock from the Sun. And the students have been learning about what it takes, you know, to have the right stuff to be an astronaut. They've learned about the International Space Station, and they learned about Earth, Mars, and the six lost lessons that Krista McAuliffe, who was the first teacher that was going to go into space except for that tragedy. And now all of those lessons, Newton's laws and some other things, they're mainly worrying about no anti-gravity and its effect on human beings. That's what the lessons are about.
Right. It's shocking that it was 35 years now. I just, boy, blink your eye and there goes 35 years. But it's really great that these lessons are being redone. And it is all Newton's law and about, which is so fascinating, cohesion and adhesion. And I love them. So how are they being applied to what you're doing?
Well, the students get on NASA.org. Anybody can get on that website and you can be in the International Space Station right now as they're moving in space. And you can also on YouTube find out what the rover is finding out today. You can even get on a website on NASA, type in your zip code, and you can find out twice a day the International Space Station goes over our head and we can watch it for a couple of minutes. And, you know, so it's just exciting. We're studying cultural journalism, which was Elliot Wigginton coined the phrase when he had his Foxfire project. I think it might be still going on, but it's a study of any kind of culture and then journalistically getting it out to the world. It's not just writing an article. It can be any kind of media or live performance. And we are studying the culture of the scientific culture of space travel.
So Emily, can you describe to us what the experience is like for you?
So actually getting to go back to Challenger Learning Center, I went there in third or fourth grade. And we went there for one mission. I unfortunately can't remember which mission it was, but it was interesting to go back a little older to actually be able to enjoy everything and really participate instead of being a third grader who's like just learning how to do everything. And you're kind of like, oh, this is really cool. And, you know, you're more paying attention to all the little gadgets and stuff that's around you versus what you're supposed to be doing. So it was fun doing the Learning Center, but also going through all the stuff that the professor has been having us talk about is really interesting. To just kind of learn more about it, especially when we got to go to NASA.org and look at the different parts of the International Space Station pretty much through an astronaut's eyes and actually be a part of it and kind of be able to interact with it all too.
You know, with your business degree, are you interested in relating? Because now space is becoming much more business oriented with the private industry. Would you think about mm-hmm. going into any kind of work that might touch on space travel or future space travel?
Possibly. I've always been interested in space and kind of what may be out there and what we may be able to find if we were to travel farther. But I haven't really thought about it going business-wise and kind of merging or focusing more on doing it that way. But that's definitely something I may look into a little bit more because you are right. It is becoming more business-oriented and a lot more, well, business-wise. So.
That's true. How many participants, and this could be either for Emily or Meg, how many participants are in the Mission to Mars program?
Well, we had a dozen. We had a dozen that day. But, you know, as far as family folklore goes, we have about 50 people, but a lot. I mean, it's open to anybody and it's free. You know, we're funded by South Shore Arts and the Indiana Arts Commission and the National Humanities Foundation and private donors. And we get a lot of charitable people donate their, but anyhow, there's all that is going on. But as far as when people are available, like our little, our younger people, they're in school, you know, they really can't get out. And then their parents are usually working, so they can't get out and retired people can. But if we do things on the weekends, you know, so we had a dozen that came and Family Folklore provided hazmat suits for them. And so we were like really looking like astronauts. And then we'll use those costumes when we do our radio play. That'll be the costumes because the students will be impersonating famous astronauts. And then they're also going to be having animal. You know how there's been animals in space? They have each one of them has their own puppet animal, and the animals are going to audition to be astronauts in space and also crack jokes because, you know, they're kind of like little children. It's hard for them to be serious. So, yeah, that'll make it fun. And then this is going to go like on IUN's website, and it's going to go like all through IU, and it's going to be on Family Folklore YouTube. It's going to be like going all over the place. So children, people of all ages can learn from us.
So now that's down the road that you're actually going to put that together and then put it out there. And I guess I'll ask you both how the pandemic has influenced not only the project, but you personally. But Meg, you first, and then you, Emily.
Well, I'm just going to say that I hadn't even met my students until last Thursday at the Challenger Learning Center. And they're just a delightful group of people. And, you know, it's tragic, you know, to have to be on Zoom the whole time because I enjoy being around people. And this is the closest thing I can get. I tell them they're my captive audience, you know. but as far as the pandemic goes, I'm at home a lot anyhow because I'm retired. It's really not that different. And I'm lucky enough, I landed on my feet because I live right. I have to say I live next to a lake because sometimes I tell people I live on a lake and they're like, what, in a boat? I'm like, no, I'm just on the shore. And so I can look out at the seagulls and the Canadian geese, you know, and, you know, take a walk around the lake. And but I watch a lot of TV and I read a lot of spy novels. That's what I do. And I have a nice husband and a big family. We have 5 kids. So they try to drop in and we have a masked and anonymous.
Excellent. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Emily, tell us your pandemic journey.
well, not much has changed for my work. It was the biggest thing that maybe changed was because we went out and visited people at their houses. We mainly work with union members and their families, getting them covered. And we had a big change come March because we all went virtual. So then we all transferred into, we were doing all of our stuff on Zoom, which was a big change for a lot of us. And now we're starting to kind of run into where some people do want us to come back out. They're a little more comfortable, especially with the COVID vaccine going around. And so we're kind of having to teach our new people how to actually do in-home appointments because they've never done them before, because when they came into it, it was all virtual. So we're kind of running into that. But personally, I mean, that was only really the big thing that changed. I still, if I wanted to teach last year, I could have, but I decided just because there was a lot of travel involved in it, I didn't want to travel for too much. And I really didn't know how many students were going to show up. And I, when I do travel for my motorcycle job, it's about over an hour and a half away to go travel to it. So it takes me a little bit. And I'm like, do I really want to go? But other than that, I mean, school-wise, I do online school. I like it better than going in person. I went in person for a whole entire year down at IUPUI, and then I decided that I didn't like in person anymore because I got bored through a lot of the lectures. So I would just decided I was going to go online and be able to do all my assignments and all of that and be done. So, I mean, it works better for me. So it wasn't too big of a change. Work still stayed the same pretty much, other than just going virtual. And we still went out sailing when the summertime came around, and my dad sold boat, and we still had, you know, family get togethers for holidays, and got to go on vacation to Florida in July at the beginning, and got to spend the 4th of July down there.
Nice. That sounds fun.
Yeah, it does. So Meg, have you been able to do virtual rehearsals, or play at?
Okay. I also wanted to say that we've had guest visitors, guest speakers. We had Miranda Morley came and talked about once you graduate, along with your career, what else are you going to do with your life? And talking about how we all have these wonderful dreams, but there's something right big right in front of us that we need to learn how to get over, you know, so that we can go in. So she talked about that. And then Jessica Renslow came, and the students worked together, and they made an iMovie for reinvestingary.org. And on that Facebook page, you can see their iMovie where they selected a part of a block of IUN that needed a better pedestrian and bicycle plan. And they actually did a whole iMovie on this. And this was part of the study of the Earth because, you know, when we go into outer space, it's not just to take our bad habits with us. We need to take care. That's one thing they learned about the Earth, was that it's a fantastic planet, you know, but we need to take care of it. We can't just go over to Mars and trash it. And so they were learning how to take care of the ecology on the Earth. I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you're talking about the right stuff, right?
Yeah, so it was really great. And we're going to have Adam Golikowski. Okay, so this week the students are learning how to write their own grants. Now they're student grants. It's an assignment. There's no money involved, but points. But they're going to learn how to write a grant. And next week, they're going to each make their own cameo monologue about their person, their famous astronaut. And then also they're making a script for their puppet to talk about in the audition. For instance, if it was an elephant, he might say, well, I have a good memory and I could carry things. And, you know, maybe the auditioner might say, yeah, but, you know, you kind of take up a lot of space, you know. And so kind of that's going to go on with the puppets. They're going to work on that next week. And then the week after that, Adam Golikowski, who you probably know, he does drama interpretation. He works with them on their monologues. And then that Thursday, Becky or Rebecca Swenson is a ace puppeteer. And she also came to the Learning Center. She is going to teach them how to mobilize their puppets and get the most
how to animate them. Yeah.
Yeah. How to animate them. So we're getting that all together. Then we're going to start our Zoom practices. And I think Miranda at Green Cow is going to do the editing of the Zoom, so that we already have the outline of the radio play done, but the girls have to do their their monologues and their puppet parts. And then once we're going to start doing practices, and when we like something, we're going to save it. And then once it's all put together, then we're hopefully before the semester is over, which is like May 10th or May 8th, that then it'll go online.
Who are you, Emily? I mean, who's your astronaut and companion?
So I've been so busy at work that I haven't gotten a chance to look at it. And I hate to admit this, but my little puppet that I do know, because I did get my puppet last week, it's one of the little dogs. So he's a little Labrador. That's my puppet.
Does he have a name?
Yes. Okay, she's going to be the first woman astronaut, Sally Ride. And the puppet is the dog. Sally Ride had a dog named Sagan after Carl Sagan. So she's got Sagan the dog, and she's going to be Sally Ride. She doesn't know it. That's next week.
I haven't gotten a chance to look through it all. It's my weekends are my school weekends, and last weekend was a mess. So I haven't gotten to look ahead just yet.
Yeah, it won't be bad. They're going to have to look at some different articles online about, like, she'll do Sally Ride, and she'll find out maybe between 5 and 10 fascinating facts. Then she'll boil it down so that even kids can understand it and type it up, and that'll be her monologue. She'll put it in first person. And then the little puppet thing will be fun. It's going to be, she'll Google on dog joke.
Do you have any international astronauts involved in your program?
Are we going to have any?
Yeah. Well, like, the first woman in space was actually a Russian.
Oh, well, I guess this is the first American. We're going to have Jerry Ross. Okay. Actually, Mrs. Jerry Ross. His wife is going to be talking about it. Becky Swerden. And then Mary Burke, who used to be, she's in charge of junior achievement. She's going to be Octave Chanute to talk about the father of navigation. So we're getting a little bit of history in there. Jerry Ross put the first piece of the International Space Station in place. So that's cool.
And he's a Crown Point native, for people in our audience that may not know.
Yeah, so that's going to be cool. And we have somebody who's going to be a Star Trek person, because one of the astronauts talked the space program into naming the first shuttle Enterprise. And so this person is going to, they've got like a person, I know, she's got a frog. Because they put amphibians in space already. So she's going to have this cute frog, its legs move. And she's going to talk about the connection between Star Trek and the early inventions that you saw on there, and how many of them are now being used. Like, they had like the first flip top phone, you know, and there's other things that they had that are going on now. We're having somebody from Mars. She's going to be dressed up kind of like a goddess. You know, a Mars goddess, and then she's got a cute little puppet that is going to be a Martian, and he's probably going to talk like this, you know, like the Warner Brothers.
I don't know if you've read the Martian Chronicles, but in the last chapter, there's a cute story, and they're people from Earth, but they went there and the Earth was in bad shape. And so one of the kids and his wife and everything, well, yeah, you're going to show us Martians. And I won't tell the whole story, but what they do is they go to the edge of a canal, which actually in the story has water in it. He says, okay, I'm going to show you Martians. They look over the edge of the ridge and say, and there they were, the Martians. What was their reflection they saw? They were the new Martians. Very interesting little monologue. Oh,
well, that's Ray Bradbury, right?
Yeah, right. It's the end chapter.
That sounds like his show, One Step Beyond or Twilight Zone. Yeah, I love that. I didn't get to the end of that book. I got the beginning. I've been watching all those movies. I watched the Star Trek first movie, 1979. It was great. And Martian with Matt Damon. No, Matt, wasn't
right,
it?
Matt Damon, correct.
Yeah, that was really good. But when we went to the space, when we went to the Learning Center, it's divided up into two places. One is a station, you know, just like Cape Canaveral, but it's located on one of the Mars of Moon. And one of the moons of Mars, that's where it is. And so in your brain, you're like, okay, I'm on Probus, you know, the one of the two moons of Mars, you know. So, and then halfway through, you know, you work in Paris, you go over and you work your station. Like, actually, Emily and I were both navigators. We switched after 2 hours, and she was over there. Then she went where I was, which is it was a shuttle that was going to land on Mars because it was the year 2076. And there are people, there are colonies already there on Mars. So it was exciting. There was some, we don't want to tell you all that happens because it'd be nice if if the audience can go, but it was very exciting. I was very exuberant when I got out alive.
Yes, it's always good because in space, no one can hear you scream. I can't remember who, which.
That's a good one, too.
Well, I think that was Isaac Asimov thing. We have about 1 minute left. So tell us, first of all, the websites and contact information, and also maybe where they can, what other projects you might have going for FamFolk.
Okay. Well, hopefully we're going to get next year's, which is called Our Big Little Backyard. And it's kind of a scavenger hunt of your actual backyard. And you find some kind of a mystery, and then based on that mystery, or it could be in your family, kind of an ancestral thing, you then go and study the world, which is also your backyard. That's why we call it the Big Little Backyard. So there'll be a lot of field trips involved, and maybe geodes and sand and, going on the family tree. But so let me tell you some websites. The first syllable, famfolkfound.org. You can see what's going on in our program on that website. So it's the first syllable of Family Folklore Foundation, FamFolkFound.org. Okay. And then you can find us on YouTube, Family Folklore Foundation. And we've got a lot of videos there that we've been making all along because we have quite a few talented people like Larry Breckner. You're very talented. We have some people that know how to, be tech desk people. So those are two places. If you want to go to reinvestingary.org, you can see the students. It's the G400 IUN movie about improving IUN's ped and bike way. They suggested doing a hamster tunnel underneath and above Broadway so that people can get to the parking, So these are good ideas.
Well, we'd like to thank you for being on Art in the Air. Meg DeMakis from Family Folklore, and Emily DeCosmaker, who's one of the students in the current Mission to Mars project. Thank you so much for being on Art on the Air.
Okay, thank you.
And we'd like to thank our guests today for being on Art in the Air, which is heard every Friday at 11 a.m., rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m., and Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Your hosts are Larry Breckner and Esther Golden. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President, Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Underwriters for Art in the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum and Walt Breininger of Paragon Investments. Also, Mary Levan is our art patron supporter. Art in the Air is supported by the Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts-related event, exhibit, please email us at artontheair@wvlp.com. That's artontheair@wvlp.com. See you right here next week, 103.1 FM and 89.1 FM, Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Mary and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.